Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Well, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Today's Issues, the name of the program. I am Tim, and joining me to co-host in studio is Walker Wildman. Good morning, Walker.
Good morning. Good to be here this Thursday, one day before Trivia Friday is how I like to think of it.
That's right. America waits tomorrow to, as Ed Battagliano says, get smarterer. Tomorrow on the show, Trivia Friday. What are we doing on the internet today, Walker, to enhance the listening experience for our folks?
Yeah, there you go. Well, we're not only enhancing the listener experience,
right?
We're enhancing the viewer experience.
Right, we're engaging several different senses.
Yes, yeah, so you can watch the show, listen to the show, and read the news articles we talk about all on our Facebook page, Today's Issues on Facebook. Also, Today's Issues is on YouTube as of the last few months, so you can go to YouTube and watch the show each day live. Visit our website, afr.net, and catch any of the past podcasts there, and also download the American Family Radio app. Obviously, many ways to stay up to date with American Family Radio.
Steve Jordahl is in studio with us as well. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, Tim. Good morning, Walker.
And Ray Pritchard. Ray joins us from Kansas City. Ray's on Tuesdays and Thursdays that he is able to do so. Good morning, Ray.
Good morning, Tim. How you doing?
Weather in Kansas City today is what?
Oh, it's cloudy. We had a little rain overnight, just cloudy and cool, I would say. Pretty mild for late June.
Hey, being a new resident there to KC, have you picked out a favorite barbecue restaurant yet?
There is there's a restaurant called Blind Box Barbecue that Marlene has had us go back to a couple of times. So, but you know, Kansas City is one of those places, Tim, where you can find good barbecue on every street corner. We'll never come to the end of all the barbecue here in Kansas City. Never. I won't live that long.
Okay, a year from now I'll be asking you, and you would have found a new place.
That's right.
To eat great barbecue in Kansas City. All right. Well, much to talk about today. Steve Jordahl is going to guide us around the world of news.
And as always, no shortage of news. Let's start right here. President Trump last night decided to go ahead and sign an executive order that will allow parents and children to stay together at the border if they have been caught crossing illegally, and they are going to be still prosecuted. So what this executive order does is it keeps the zero-tolerance policy that he wanted in place. They're not going to be catch and release. They're not going to be sent away or otherwise excused. They're going to be prosecuted. But for now, they are going to be kept together as a family unit somewhere, somehow. And there's the details are still being put together, I understand. So there's a question as to whether or not the courts will allow this. And, of course, Democrats who just the other day were saying, Mr. Trump, you can solve this with your pen and a phone right now. When he did that, now they don't like it. So discuss.
Well, so... What did you mean when you said the courts may not allow it?
A judge had earlier ruled that it's you cannot hold children in detention for more than 20 days. Now, this didn't say that separated. You just if it's a child, you can't be in detention more than 20 days. And this executive order, they have actually literally asked this judge to revamp that and to reconsider that in order to keep children and parents together.
Yeah, to help our listeners understand this, and it is very complicated, the legal system is, but back in 1997, the Attorney General Janet Reno, under Bill Clinton, had a case in the Ninth Circuit with a plaintiff with the last name of Flores. And the ruling there was that created the standard that children can only be detained for 20 days, then they have to be put in a child care kind of holding facility, or they have to be released. So, this being said, that is why that court case began the separation policy because you can't keep kids in detention facility for more than 20 days, but you can keep adults indefinitely.
So in essence, Walker, does this mean that what the executive order is going to be taken to court and then this judge is going to have to decide?
The executive order only allows the family, quote, I say family lightly, the adults and children, to be more accurate, the adults and children that cross together, it only allows them to stay together in a facility for 20 days without, because if you go longer, you would violate that court ruling from 1997. So President Trump has instructed the Department of Justice to appeal that ruling from 1997 and hopefully, like Steve said, get a different outcome there. But this is all out of the hands of President Trump for the most part. He has obviously done what he can to keep the adults and children together, but a lot of this is out of his control.
Let me get this straight here. Or try to get this straight, and you're right, it's very complicated. So what the left was complaining about is and going hysterical about is, and some in the middle or some on the right, I guess, who were trying to make President Trump look bad, in my opinion. They were saying, they don't like the fact that when an adult crosses the border illegally, they are processed, and they may have children with them. They may or may not be their family members or their own kids. And so they're separated for obvious reasons, and the children are put in one area, and the adults are processed for their illegal actions in another area. Okay, so what the left is saying, no, they want the kids to go through the process with these adults who are being charged with entering the U.S. illegally. True?
That's correct.
Correct.
That's correct. And
so you're holding their hands, walking down the hall, and then when they go to some holding area, the adults, the kids are with them?
Yeah, this is a lose-lose. Right. When I say it's a lose-lose, if you want an immediate solution tomorrow, it's a lose-lose, because here's your two options, as we've said. Well, there's three options that most people aren't talking about. The first option, as Abe Hamilton rightly mentioned yesterday, the first option and the best option for, quote, families and adults and children that don't want to be separated is for the adults to admit that they have crossed the border illegally and they submit to deportation. They will be...
That way they keep their family together.
The family are the pair stays together.
Gotcha.
In that process, it would be called an expedited removal.
That's if you love your children.
That's if you love the children
that
you're with.
In my opinion.
Yeah, you stay together. Seriously.
Right.
Yeah, you stay together. So that would be called an expedited removal.
Nobody talks about that, by the way.
No, there's no judge hearing. No. There's no finger. Well, they may process you still. But in a matter of days, you and the children that were with you are sent back to your country of origin.
Gotcha.
Food, lodging, and travel all paid for by the U.S. government.
Me.
And housing in those few days.
Okay, got you. That's one option.
That's one option. The second option is to seek asylum, is to claim that you will be persecuted if you go back to your country of origin. In that case, that's where the separation occurs. The adults know that they're going to be separated if they try to seek asylum.
If they have crossed the border illegally.
If they have crossed the border
if
illegally.
If they present themselves at a crossing and say we are seeking asylum, they are not separated.
That's correct. That's correct.
So they may. That's the reason they.
So the so the second option is to seek asylum at someone else somewhere elsewhere than a checkpoint, a official U.S. checkpoint.
But the U.S. is not granting asylum for people from Central American countries that I know of. Right? Do you know anything about that?
Well, it's become extremely controversial, hasn't it? Because the system has been abused, and I think almost everybody agrees the immigration system is broken. There's been a lot of abuse on the asylum side, so no, they've clamped down heavily on that.
So the second option is the asylum option, which then creates separation, but it's the adult's decision to create that separation by seeking asylum, knowing that the children are going to be separated from the adult.
Okay.
The third option is
this is Trump's fault. The first two.
let's just put that out
first
there.
First two are Trump's fault. All 100%.
The third option is what. The left acted like they wanted, now they don't want what President Trump did, and that is we keep the children and adults together and the children go with the adults to the detention facility, which is basically a jail, and they go in the jail cell with the adults for at least 20 days.
Ray?
Okay, so yesterday's executive order, it sounds to me, Walker, like this is more of a temporary fix. Is there something Congress could do and should do that would give us a longer-term solution?
Yes, Congress can act.
And then I got Tim's solution after he's got, okay. You got Congress's, Walker, I got my solution.
Yeah, Congress can act. I think they should act, but I think they won't act because they cannot get anything done. Chuck Schumer said yesterday, and yes, he said it, he said, no, Congress should not do anything. He said the president should do everything. So he doesn't, even if he said, the reporter said, what about if we give you amnesty? He said, no, the president should do everything. So this is baffling as to why the Democrats will not come along.
Because the president is suffering here, public image-wise. Yeah. Right. We agree with him, but I would say the majority of American people, at least 50%, view this as a wrong treatment of people. Go ahead.
Number one, the president is backed into a corner, according to the Democrats. That's what they think, and that they can make political hay out of this.
Yes, and they're reveling in this.
Right.
Number two, they are trying to box him into a situation where the only possible solution is to revert back to the Obama policy of catch and release.
Mm-hmm.
Where we just
excuse. That's what the Democrats
it.
Want.
That's exactly. What they want. And it's interesting to see... From the left, these people that were calling just 2 days ago, or yesterday even earlier, that they want the president to act with a pen and he can solve it. Listen to what the news, this is cut number one, Brent. Listen to how the news covered the coverage of this executive order signing.
At the end of the day, as Kristen points out, this executive order does not end the zero tolerance policy. Everyone will be continue to be prosecuted.
So long as these parents are being prosecuted criminally, they will be separated from their children.
Right. It does not reverse his zero tolerance policy. And so we're still going to have some really critical issues to deal with relating to detention and detention of children with young families with young children.
I really look forward to reading that executive order, because how are parents going to be brought into court without being separated from their children for the criminal hearing?
So he's criticizing it, but he'd like to read it too.
Yeah.
Yeah, the liberals, the Democrats, the news media, they view this as a no-win situation for the president. And the reason Chuck Schumer says the president should do it all, he knows that Congress can't provide an answer and he doesn't want to be responsible for it.
Right.
Because he knows behind closed doors, he knows that the only options the president has is the ones you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And he knows they can ride this bad publicity for President Trump for a few more days, if not weeks, with the current situation. So they don't want to solve it, okay,
right.
Because it's causing President Trump trouble. Now, nobody seemed to care about my solution earlier.
Well, your solution
was? What was your solution?
Y'all jumped right on past it and didn't even ask me about it.
We're holding a place of honor for
you.
It right about
no,
now.
listen, this is very simple. To me, how we deal with this, and Ray, I'd like your thoughts on this.
Sure.
What you do is, if I were the president of the United States, I would put, I don't know, I would put 10,000, I'm just pulling a number out, 10,000 more border agents on the southern border. First of all, I would do let me back up for a minute. I would play the speech from President Obama that we played yesterday, where he says to Central Americans, do not send your children to us. It was an excellent talk by President Obama that if President Trump had said what he said. Do we have that clip? I'll play it again. I know people have had their limit on how much they want to hear from President Obama on this show, but I need to play this again, because had President Trump said what President Obama said in 2014, this is what President Obama said in 2014.
Our message absolutely is, don't send your children unaccompanied on trains or through a bunch of smugglers. We don't even know how many of these kids don't make it and may have been waylaid into sex trafficking or killed because they fell off a train. We have no way of tracking that. So that is our direct message to the families in Central America. Do not send your children to the borders. If they do make it, they'll get sent back. More importantly, they may not make it.
Okay, that's President Obama. If you put those words into the mouth of President Trump, he would have been called Hitler. And right. Am I right, Ray?
Right, that's right.
Yeah.
That for Obama to say it, perfectly acceptable. In fact, right. I don't think there was any big explosion when he said that in 2014. Right.
No.
I mean, wouldn't we agree what President Obama
yes.
said there is perfect common sense?
Yes. He was absolutely correct to say that. I'm glad he said that. And I think, now let me finish what I would do.
Sure.
Okay, put 10,000 more, 5,000, 10,000 more border agents down there. Now, since the Democrats don't want to build a wall and some of the Republicans don't want to build a wall, which would be preventative, but we can revisit that later. Then I would get buses, okay? Buses. And station buses every couple of miles, if you want to do that. And then when the people come here and cross our border and want illegal entry into the U.S., then I would point them to the bus. And why are you laughing?
This is such a simple but yet practical solution.
Yes, I would point them to the bus. I would have agents there, obviously, who can speak Spanish. I would point them to the bus. I would have bottle water and food and Port-a-Johns mm-hmm. by the buses. And I would tell the folks, you are making an illegal entry into the United States of America. We're now deporting you. So hold on, Steve. So you put them on. You put them on the bus, and then you go back into Mexico. I don't know what the international agreement is between Mexico and the U.S., but I think you can deport them 40 to 50 miles back inland. Is that right?
I'm not sure.
Into their country. Anyway, whatever the process is there, there's got to be a process for deportation. And that is a very simple solution. You don't go through all this. Migrant holding areas, and you don't have all these public relations problems. You just simply, they cross the border, they get on the bus, they go back to their country. They cross the border again, they get on the bus, they go back to their country. How hard is that to process? Go ahead, Steve. Why are you laughing at me?
Because, Tim, you're the guy sitting at the border going, "Hey, kids, get off my lawn." Basically, I mean, it's a good solution. But, yeah, I mean, that's basically what you're saying.
That's how it would be portrayed.
No, I'm not saying
media.
It's a bad thing. It just struck me as a little funny.
Go ahead, Ray.
Well, it would work. It would work, I suppose, in some perfect world. But in the media-controlled universe of today,
Well, what is wrong with that? That is a very simple solution. Why y'all, everybody's
stopping here. On a serious note, the problem there is that we're allowing folks from Central America and Mexico to claim asylum, and then they have the right, in quotes, to go before a judge. So that's the problem.
Then we need to make a public announcement that we on countries we are accepting people here for asylum.
Yeah, and they're not.
What you do is you say we are not accepting asylum from any countries except, and then list them. Mm-hmm. That way they know when they come here, okay, I'm from Guatemala, I'm from Honduras, I'm from Costa Rica, wherever. The U.S. is not accepting asylum people from those countries. Go ahead, Steve.
I have a question.
Yes.
No one is asking for asylum from Mexico, right? These are people that are coming up
from Central America. Right.
Guatemala.
It's like as if I was getting mugged, and instead of running to the nearest police station, I go on a plane and go to Hawaii to report the crime because I'd rather be in Hawaii than, of course, at the local police station in Tupelo.
Right.
So, I mean, why doesn't Mexico deal with the asylum issue? They can provide them with safety.
Well, you can go if you want asylum in the U.S. You don't have to travel to the southern border, as you're mentioning. You can go to the nearest U.S. consulate and claim asylum if they view your asylum request as legitimate. After an interview and further investigation, they will pay for your travel to the U.S.
or the nearest Mexican consulate.
Well, I don't understand
why it has to be the U.S.
Because Mexico has very strict laws that they enforce on their southern border against people entering their country illegally. Now, if you want to pass through, Mexico going to the U.S., they're good with that.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to make permanent residence in Mexico, and they don't have to, you know, deal with that situation. So, you're right.
Frankly, they just don't want to deal with it, right?
Right.
They view it as our problem, yes. Not theirs.
Yes.
By the way, go ahead.
You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. I'm Tim Wildman with Steve Jordahl, Walker Wildman, and Ray Pritchard. And we appreciate you listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Yes, Steve?
In case you think that any of this is troubling the president,
yes,
more than just he's going to sign some legislation and do something, listen to him last night at a speech that he was making in Duluth, Minnesota. This is the president talking about the problem that he finds himself in, at least what he's being told to do.
So the Democrats want open borders. Let everybody come in. Let everybody pour in. We don't care. Let them come in from the Middle East. Let them come in from all over the place. We don't care. We're not going to let it happen. And by the way, today I signed an executive order. We're going to keep families together, but the border is going to be just as tough as it's been. Democrats don't care about the impact of uncontrolled migration on your communities, your schools, your hospitals, your jobs, or your safety. Democrats put illegal immigrants before they put American citizens.
He's having none of it. He's having a good time. This was him in Minnesota. He's in his element. He was there was a heckler that showed up with a picture of him and Putin or something. And anyway, this was a hippie with a man bun. You know what a man bun is?
Mm-hmm.
Listen to what he had to say about that.
Get him out of here. Get him out of here. Go home to your mom, darling. Go home. Was that a man or a woman? Because he needs a haircut more than I do.
Oh, man.
Oh, my word. Well,
you really don't even know what to say, right?
That's President Trump.
He's having a good time, isn't he?
Yeah, don't let it fly. All right. Anyway, we will see what happens over the next few days and weeks with respect to this situation on the southern border. I tell you what, let's take an early one minute earlier than usual timeout, and then we shall return. Jan Markell from Olive Tree Ministries will be with us a little bit later on, as will Dr. Alex McFarland. And Steve's got some more news to discuss. We appreciate you listening to American Family Radio. Walker, Tim, Steve, and Ray will be back in 2 or 3 minutes, and we'll see you then.
King of the Wild Frontier.
The music's free. We call it Learning University.
Of necessity.
Trivia Friday.
True.
Ding, ding, ding,
yes.
Ding, ding.
Oh, really?
That's correct. Giraffes do not have vocal cords.
So you want a cheeseburger without cheese?
Hold the cheese.
I said, yes, ma'am, whatever you call it.
Take a break with Tim Wildman and the gang. Friday mornings at 10 Central on American Family Radio.
One of my favorite things to do in Israel is take a boat ride on the Sea of Galilee. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. We'll be taking our annual tour of Israel in March of 2019, but it's time to sign up. We have a lot of folks sign up early, and last year, in fact, we filled up several months in advance. So for all the information on this trip to Israel, a bucket list trip for most people, go to the website twholyland.com. That's twholyland.com. Or for a free brochure, call us at 800-FAMILIES, 800-FAMILIES, option 5, and leave us your name and your phone number. We'll be flying direct from the States to Tel Aviv and then begin our tour in Jerusalem of Israel. We hope you can join us in 2019.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. Hi, this is Todd Starnes from Fox News, and one of the things I love about Liberty University is the broad vision they have for their students. Instead of simply preparing them for a career, Liberty helps students grow into mature men and women of character, striving to impact their career fields for Christ. Liberty University is the largest Christian university in the world, offering more than 550 programs of study. Visit liberty.edu to learn more. Again, that's liberty.edu. Since 2016, the mainstream media and Democrats have been on a zealous crusade to destroy Donald Trump and his supporters. We saw glimpses of what was to come early on in the campaign, bloodshed and violence. Hillary Clinton gave the liberal mob cover when she called Trump supporters irredeemable, deplorables. Since Inauguration Day, the attacks have grown even worse. The media likens the president to Hitler and his supporters brown shirts. Hollywood's joined the fray, hurling some of the most vulgar and profane smears in recent memory. Celebrities threatening to blow up the White House, inciting the left-wing mob to drag conservatives into the streets for public beatings. And most recently, a call was made to kidnap Barron Trump and toss him into a cage with pedophiles. Disgusting. Words matter, and CNN and MSNBC and the others need to knock it off before their words end up getting somebody killed. I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim, Walker, Steve, and Ray. Ray, I wanted to talk about one aspect of this that, because when we talk about these issues related to people entering our country illegally and all the minors that are coming, the children, oftentimes unaccompanied, as President Obama cited, they're coming here. It's how do you balance our compassion as Americans for people who have desperate situations or who are poor, uneducated, you know, how do you balance that versus respect for law and order and the right to maintain your sovereignty as a country? Because it has come down to this. The left in this country wants open borders, and they're getting more bold about it, by the way. They want open borders, ostensibly, they say, in the name of compassion. So they want to accept everybody to come here, and we take care of everybody, and that's the American way. There's no thought about what's the ultimate end to that scenario, okay? There's no thought to that. The other thing is we have law and order, and when you have law and order, the cops always look bad. Have you noticed that on video? By that, I mean the law and order always looks bad because somebody's handcuffed. Mm-hmm. Somebody's forced. So you have a 6'4" ICE agent, and you got a 4'10" Hispanic woman with two children. When you just see a picture of that, you go, that brute. Let her go. Find her family in San Francisco or something, and quit being mean to these people. So how do you deal with that, Ray?
Well, Tim, let me make three quick points. Number one, and this is something Sandy Rios has said several times when we've interviewed her. She's pointed out, and I agree, Americans are a compassionate people, mm-hmm. and when we see those pictures you talked about, when we see that, our hearts are moved, and I hope we never lose that as a nation. That this country, you know, the stuff that's inscribed on the Statue of Liberty, give us your huddled, your yearning masses, yearning to be free, that's a part of what America is. So we don't ever want to lose that. And I think that's why Christians are glad for what President Trump did yesterday. Is it going to solve everything? Walker's made the point. He's right. It's not going to solve everything, but we're glad. That's good to stop this enforced separation. But the second point is, A nation must be able to defend its borders and to decide who comes in and who doesn't come in, which leads to the third point, that I think we don't have to choose. And that's part of the problem of this debate. We either choose compassion and we open the borders and let everybody in, or we choose law and order and we're not letting anybody in. And Tim, isn't that really where the debate is? Where do you draw the line between one thing and the other? And I think the right answer ought to be, you don't have to choose. We can have secure borders. And Mr. Trump said this yesterday, we're gonna stop separating families, but we are gonna secure the borders. At least that's the right kind of goal for us as a nation.
Yeah, but what the left's going to do now is they're going to switch to, how can you take children to detention centers with adults? That is just wrong.
Well, they've already moved to that route.
Right.
Seriously,
right.
They have.
Right.
Huh? So he can't win.
Right.
He can't. Either you separate them so you don't send them to detention centers with adults, and now when he says, okay, we're going to keep families together, so...
The most unfortunate thing of it all, when it comes to solutions...
Yeah.
Is that if we continue with the same leadership and politicians that we have in Washington right now, and we've had for decades, nothing will be done, the problem will continue, and there's no end in sight, which is really, really unfortunate because there are solutions that they could help, but lawmakers don't seem to agree on anything.
Well, between the Democrats who want open borders and the Republicans who have spines of jelly, then we don't, you know, that's not, President Trump's basically left to do what he can do on his own. Mm-hmm. Jan Markell is with us. Jan joins us from Twin Cities in Minnesota. She is with Olive Tree Ministries. Good morning, Jan.
Good morning, and thank you for having me.
Well, you are certainly welcome. Steve had a story he wanted to ask you about.
Well, I just wanted to ask you about the United States still being, Jan, a strong presence in the United Nations, this time being a strong presence by actually pulling away from one of the more controversial United Nations groups, the Human Rights Council. And, Jan, for years I have been reporting on this council kind of being used as a way for abusers to hide their abuse, to justify their abuse, to throw shadows at other countries. The United States just finally had enough of it, didn't they?
Yeah, exactly. Nikki Haley called it an organization not worthy of its name. And when you consider some of these countries, you know, think about this, Human Rights Council, China, Cuba, Venezuela, Congo. Venezuela. I've got supporters in Venezuela, and down there they're eating zoo animals because there's no food. The repressive government down there is doing everything it can to, certainly destroy the country. But and then Nikki Haley says it's a cesspool of political bias. Well, yeah, and who is that political bias against? It's always against the one democracy in the Middle East, that's Israel. So, again, this is more refreshing change, thanks to Donald Trump and Nikki Haley.
Nikki Haley, do we have any audio from that, by the way?
I do not,
okay.
No.
Nikki Haley, of course, is our U.N. ambassador.
Yeah.
She's much beloved by the rest of the folks there in the U.N. from around the world. Right, Walker?
That's right.
We
will have in a second.
Okay.
Okay,
let's hear what UN Ambassador Nikki Haley had to say about this.
We take this step because our commitment does not allow us to remain a part of a hypocritical and self-serving organization that makes a mockery of human rights. We could have withdrawn immediately. We did not do that. Instead, we made a good faith effort to resolve the problems.
Now that's Nikki Haley there. So you would grade her an A so far, Jan, in her role?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It was a brilliant pick for her position there. I think in the future she's certainly vice presidential candidate. Who knows, down the road somewhere. Yeah. Again, those on the council, these are human rights abusers. But again, you know, gentlemen, this is an upside-down world. This is an Isaiah 5:20 world where good is called evil is called good. And right now, I mean, the United Nations is calling the nations such as China, Cuba, Venezuela, Congo, and others that are abusers, they're calling those righteous nations, and that's indicative of our upside down. We're not in Kansas anymore, world.
Jan Markell joining us. Jan is president and founder of Olive Tree Ministries. Have you already had your conference?
No, it's September 29th, and we're almost sold out of tickets. We will be live streaming it free. Folks can access my website on September the 29th with Amir Sarfati, J.D. Farag, Jack Hibbs, I can't think of them all, Billy Crone, Eric Barger, full one day. Tickets, just a few, about 100 left. It's a 5,000-seat venue, so almost all sold out for September 29th, but we welcome anyone to live stream at no cost.
What's your theme?
Well, the theme is Let's Occupy Until He Comes, and it's right out of the Bible, of course, but the theme is the lateness of the hour, and when we see some of the crazy, almost insane things going on, like we just talked about, what the UN thinks is a righteous bunch of nations. We just want to look at things from a biblical perspective, that's all, and help folks understand the times and contend for the faith. And again, Tim, we meet hundreds and hundreds of AFR listeners who come up to the Twin Cities every fall, and they are such a delight. So thank you for educating them as you do.
Absolutely. Jan Markell, where can people find out more about the conference in September?
Yep, Olive Tree Views, as in viewpoint, olivetreeviews.org, and you can hear the weekend program Saturdays at 1 Central, Sundays at 12 Central, and this weekend we're having part two of our kind of expose of a Christian cult, and how can parents of teens and 20-somethings spot a Christian cult and spare their young people what the parents are revealing on these two programs, what they went through because they were a little bit naive.
Okay. Jan, thanks so much for joining us. God bless you.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Jan Markell joining us from the Twin Cities with Olive Tree Ministries. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Next story, Steve.
Boy, the fallout from what happened, I think we talked the other day about the Southern Poverty Law Center, that so-called hate watch group, settled with a gentleman named Majid Nawaz, and he is a Muslim, a former Muslim, a current Muslim, that is speaking out against radical Islam. And SPLC settled for more than $3 million over wrongly labeling him as an extremist, as a hate person. So now groups are starting to think about lining up. they're talking with groups like Liberty Council and our friend Matt Staver there, who has at this point not put anything together, but there are more than 60 organizations considering filing lawsuits now against the Southern Poverty Law Center.
This is a big deal. This is a big deal for this reason. The Southern Poverty Law Center is the left-wing group out of Montgomery, Alabama, and they're the ones that find hate groups under every rock, okay? And including American Family Association. We're a hate group. We may be a charter member of their hate group map, but so much of what they cite is just our groups that don't even exist, really, or have one or two people, and they say that, you know, hate's just exploding all over America. Well, in this case, they accused a man, Ray, of running a hate organization. Well, the man himself was a Muslim. He was only pointing out and educating people about Muslim extremist groups and teaching, okay? And so the Southern Poverty Law Center, I think they got a little sloppy here, quite frankly, and it's because they just throw a hate group label on any so quick it'll make your head spin, because they need a reason to exist. So they got to find hate groups everywhere. So they mislabel this fella, and he took them to court, and they settled out of court, Ray, $3.3 million. When you settle out of court. And you pay $3 million, you're saying we were dead wrong.
Right. You're saying this could have been $7 million, $10 million, $15 million. That's a huge out-of-court settlement for them to make.
Yes.
So can you imagine what would happen if 60 organizations sued them at once?
Yeah. I think they are a discredited organization. The FBI, even under the Obama administration, quit using the SPLC as a group that was an authority on what hate is. And so I think their influence will fall off. They're not really involved in lawsuits anymore. They, as Walker cited, they've got hundreds of millions of dollars. Mm-hmm. They even invest in offshore
the Cayman Islands.
In the Cayman Islands. I mean, if this group really thought that hate groups were a bad problem across America, they would be using the money that they've been giving by their Hollywood friends and their Northeastern liberal friends to actually do some work to combat the hate groups. But when you got a couple hundred million dollars in the bank and you've got opulent offices in Montgomery, is what people tell me, and you're paying out $3.3 million because you are admitting you were wrong about somebody. They had to apologize to Dr. Ben Carson, too, a couple of years ago. I think they are more and more a discredited organization. You're listening to the radio program today, and talk about a group that's misnamed. The Southern Poverty Law Center. I do think they need to rename the Southern Rich Law Center. It would be a more appropriate, don't you think, Walker, name?
I absolutely think, and another factor to this is that over the decades, America and Christians in America have increasingly put down and disowned any kind of hate, bigotry, racism, etc. So considering in decades past, America has come a long ways when it comes to relations between race, etc. But the Southern Poverty Law Center still needs a reason to exist and make big bucks. Thus, they make up the phony hate list.
Yeah, and with the left, you can't. The idea of hating this sin and loving the sinner doesn't exist. So, if you speak out against homosexuality, for example, as being a sin against God, that by definition, Ray, is hate, according to them.
Well, their only real influence these days is with the mainstream media.
Right.
Whenever there's an article, you know, in the Post or the Times or Time Magazine or one of the big networks, that's when you hear about this so-called hate list. They use it to attack us and other organizations. Talk about an organization. You know, maybe one day, decades ago, maybe they had mm-hmm. some useful purpose, but that useful purpose is long since gone.
Yeah. Dr. Alex McFarland, who's heard each afternoon here on American Family Radio, on the program Exploring the Word with Bert Harper, Brother Bert Harper. Alex and Brother Bert host that show, and Alex joins us each Thursday that he can, and he joins us now. Good morning, Alex.
Good morning, everybody.
You at home in North Carolina?
No, I'm actually on the campus of North Greenville University in South Carolina.
In South Carolina. Now, North Greenville University, is that a Baptist school?
It is a Baptist school founded in 1892. The motto of the school is Where Christ Makes the Difference. And
what do you teach there?
Apologetics and Christian worldview. And you know what? I want to brag on the school for just a little bit. A few years ago, there were some things about gay and lesbian, you know, curriculum and things like that. And the trustees of the school is really operated by the South Carolina Baptist Convention. So in a way, this, you know, 3,000 student university is one of the ministries of the South Carolina Baptist Convention. And mm-hmm. they were asked about, you know, gay marriage, transgenderism, a lot of the politically correct content. And the trustees of North Greenville said, we will close up, turn out the lights, shut her down before we ever introduce that type of content. And they said, well, yeah, what about government support and government subsidies? They said, we don't have it, don't want it, don't need it. We're about the Word of God.
Wow.
And that's
good
why
for them.
That's why I'm here.
Yeah. Hey, I want to ask you, Alex, I don't know if you and Brother Bird have tackled this or if you've been, hopefully, I think I've heard you speak on this topic, but what is does the Bible have anything to say or give us any instruction on countries having borders? I know it's not one of the Ten Commandments. Is there In other words, there are some Christians who would say that, you know, we don't need to have borders because borders, you know, borders are not friendly and don't welcome strangers. And the Bible says we need to be welcoming and we need to take care of the poor and the needy. No question about that. We need to help in that regard. But does that mean that we does the Bible allow for countries to have borders, or does it even address that issue at all?
Well, a great question. The Bible has a lot to say about borders and immigration and the humane, just treatment of strangers, but it's talking about individuals. Now, God, I think back in like Leviticus chapter 19 and Exodus 22, God told Israel to treat a visitor or a sojourner hospitably because you were sojourners in the land of Egypt. But here's the thing. I mean, the Bible clearly does give rights to nations and individuals. You know, I think when, in the book of Acts, when Paul was traveling, when he needed to, he would invoke his Roman citizenship for his own protection and to assert his rights as a Roman citizen. So here's one of the things that one of the problems I have with the left, that they want open borders and they don't like any sense of nationalism. You know, it's just not livable. I mean, it's just not livable. And the thing is, the very same progressives that will try and cite the Bible in an attempted defense of their open borders policy and statism, they ignore the very same Bible that talks about morals, marriage, the sanctity of human life. So here's the thing. It is to individuals and to the church that God has given the call to benevolence and charity. The government, according to Romans 13, and I do believe that our Attorney General quoted Romans 13 correctly, and I appreciate his use of Romans 13, 1 through 7, is that government exists really as a ministry of God to preserve and perpetuate order. Why? So that we can have a culture that is conducive to the spread of the gospel, 1 Timothy 2, 2 through 4. But, you know, in no way does the call to treat sojourners charitably, in no way can that be construed to mean that we should have open borders and state, you know, free tuition, free hospitals, free medicine, free everything. The liberals have really tried to co-opt what the Bible says about immigration. And in the drive-by media, that might work, but upon closer examination, it doesn't hold water.
You know, Alex, every point you made is so well taken. Let me ask you this. Do we have to choose between border security and showing compassion? Sometimes it seems to me, and we've just been talking about this earlier on the show, sometimes it seems like, you know, you either have to go one way, the kids on the border, or we've got to build the wall. Is there a way to balance those two things is there a biblical approach to finding the balance here?
That's a great question. That's a great question. And let me say this, unlike a lot of the people that peddle outrage over current immigration policies and our attempt to have responsible immigration protocols. My wife and I have been to third world nations, together and individually. And I've been to much of Mexico, South America, Africa, developing nations where people live in very terrible conditions. Sadly, let me just say to a lot of the liberals that don't want families separated, and of course none of us do, great, wonderful. Then I'm sure, like myself, you'll be willing to go to these countries and help rebuild families and introduce morality and a Judeo-Christian moral code, because the best favor we can do a hurting world, the best favor that we could ever do a hurting world, is to introduce God and morality. North Greenville University, 500 North Greenville students a year, almost 20% of the student population go on mission trips to developing nations every year. And that's an ethic we teach. And so, believe it or not, as hard as it is in the short term to introduce responsible policies and consistently hold them, in the long term, that is the most loving thing we can do for people.
I want to ask you, related to that, when I ask this question, sometimes it sounds cold and callous, and I don't mean it to sound this way. And maybe it's unfair to ask you this with 5 minutes to go in the show here, Alex, but I contend that unless things change fundamentally in these countries around the world, like in Central America, we see what's happening in Venezuela and other places, Americans, we invest, American, especially American evangelical churches, and the Catholic Church does too, but evangelical churches will spend millions and millions of dollars annually on helping poor people in Central America. We all know people who go to these countries. But it seems like in 25 years from now, we'll still be saying, hey, we need to go help the poor people in Central America. And I agree we should, but it doesn't seem like to me these things, these countries fundamentally ever change so that they can have some prosperity and change their, you know what I'm saying?
Just sure.
Same way in Africa. I think 50 years from now we'll be going, well, we need to go help those poor people in Africa. It's just like they never are able to help themselves get out of their poverty. It's just, and I'm not saying we shouldn't go do that kind of gospel and humanitarian work. I'm just saying, why is that? Why do things never change?
Well, you know, it's so easy to throw money at problems, and that's been the liberal default position for decades. But what there has to be is a change in the culture, and that only comes through a change in people. And that only comes through a change in the heart, which comes through the Lord. You know, Ann Coulter took an immeasurable amount of heat back in the late 90s with the rise of Islam and jihadism. And she said this, and I'm only repeating what Ann Coulter said, but she said, we need to go into the Islamic countries, kill their leaders, and convert the people to Christianity. And of course, she was excoriated for saying that.
Mm-hmm.
But the truth there is, you know, very famously when Billy Graham was in New York one time, a protester was on the street preaching communism and shouted out, communism can put a new suit of clothes on that man. And a Christian shouted, yes, but Christianity can put a new man in that suit of clothes. You see, what we have to do, the reason that things don't seem to change, and the reason why we have such a blessed, maybe even fragile, wonderful thing here in America. America was based on Christianity. What the world needs, what individuals need, and it will change cultures, and it is. And look in places like Zambia, where Christianity is doing such an amazing work. What they need is a change of heart, and that comes only through a relationship with the Lord Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm. And so much corruption. There's corruption in America, too, but there's so much corruption in so many of these countries. And it never seems to change. So hopefully, you know, I would just once I'd like somebody to ask the question, why is it that America is so prosperous and wealthy? And why is it that the Americans can continue to help people around the world? Because the Americans are financially blessed in so many ways. Well, what is the difference between us and those countries? I don't think it's the people. Necessarily. I mean, it's not anything genetic. It's the ideals that America was built on that has led to our prosperity and so forth. Alex, thanks so much, my friend. Appreciate it.
God bless you all.
All right, we shall return with more of today's issues in 5 minutes. Stay with us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.